This is the Turf Zone Podcast, your central information and news hub, bringing together professionals from turf associations across multiple states to share things to help you and your business. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Virginia Turfgrass Council. This episode is sponsored in part by ByeSod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. Now, let's get in the zone.
Welcome to the Turf Zone. In this episode, we're speaking to Margaret Fisher, chair of the Plant Nova Natives Outreach Committee. Good morning, Margaret. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. So I just want to lead in with kind of why you and I are talking for this specific occasion. Tom Tracy has shared some information that you and he have been passing back and forth, and it sounds like you two have really come up with some great things in common and ways you can work together to reach both of your goals. So I want to kind of start with what you do and what your goals are with the Plant Nova Natives Committee.
All right. Well, Plant Nova Natives, the NOVA stands for Northern Virginia. This is a social marketing partnership made up of something like 150 local organizations in Northern Virginia that are all working together to get out the word about native plants and their value in saving our local ecosystem. We've been going for almost a decade now at that, trying to reach people in as many ways as we can, social media to a certain extent, but also by reaching people where they are in person and by doing events and conferences, including conferences for landscape professionals. And so my role in that is to come up with and organize ways of doing outreach.
Okay. So I think probably most people in Virginia have heard a little bit about the push to move toward more native plants. So can you tell me why that's been such a focus and why it's so important?
Right. Well, what people need to know, which is almost all they need to know to get started on this, is that insects can only eat the plants with which they evolved for the most part. And birds can only feed their babies insects for the most part. So if you don't have native plants that feed the insects, you won't have the insects that feed the birds. And in general, the ecosystem falls apart. Those are just two examples of why native plants are key to the future of our local ecosystem. And unfortunately, when we build houses in Northern Virginia and elsewhere, of course, we tear out the native plants to put down houses and driveways and roads. And what we leave behind is in between is just construction dirt. And then we throw down some turf grass and put in some plants. But mostly what developers have been using are non-native plants, and that includes the turf grass. And so you could have a landscape that started out as woods that fed the whole ecosystem, the birds and everyone else, and end up with a landscape that feeds nobody. So what we're trying to do is encourage people to start substituting or adding native plants to their landscaping so that there's something for the birds to eat. And it turns out that in order to actually support the ecosystem, your property or your neighborhood needs to have at least 70% or so biomass consisting of native plants. A lot of that's going to be trees. And so native trees are particularly important to this process. So we're hoping to get this word out because our population of birds and other wildlife has been steadily declining over the last 50 years in Northern Virginia and also in, by the way, the world in general. And we want to help that on a local basis because sometimes people think of nature and wildlife as something way out there, maybe in the mountains or in the Chesapeake Bay or somewhere else. But this is part of the world too. These birds are as important as any other birds. So we can actually do something about it on our own properties, and we are trying to urge people to do that. You can imagine that this work is unlikely to happen in a city to a great extent. I mean, it will to some extent, but only little pockets here and there. And it's unlikely to happen on a farm where they've clear-cut everything and are spraying insecticides everywhere. And so what that really leaves is the places in the sort of exurban and suburban environment where we do have control over our property. We have no reason why we need to spray insecticides or any particular reason why we have to have one plant over another. So it's going to make a difference if we all work together on this. If you're planting native plants in order to support the insects, like the caterpillars that are the main food for baby birds, it would be extremely rude to then go and spray them with insecticides because you don't like mosquitoes.
Yeah. Right?
You'd be killing off the things that you're trying to support. So again, if you just start with that basic concept that you need native plants to feed the insects, then it follows that you should not be spraying insecticides on your property, no matter how much you hate mosquitoes or ticks. You can find other ways to control their population and to live with them and leave the animals alone. Other things follow, like not overdoing it with other chemicals that damage the soil, that support, again, other parts of our ecosystem. It also follows that you don't want to overdo it with the lawn, right? So because turf grass is from Europe, even if it's called Kentucky bluegrass, it's not from Kentucky, it's from Europe. It has essentially no value to wildlife. And so if there's ways that you might want to think about chipping away at that, that would be a good idea. You want your lawn because you want a place to walk. Although, of course, if you're talking about California, that's totally different. You wouldn't want a lawn there, no matter where you want to walk. Mm-hmm. But in this water-rich environment of Northern Virginia, you still can get away without any problem with having lawns that you play on or walk on. But most of our lawns, we don't play on or walk on. We just look at them. And so how about looking at some more shrubs and maybe some native grasses, other things that could look equally beautiful and attractive in the suburban environment without having to resort to non-native plants. And the other problem that we need to consider with lawns and where we put them is that they don't soak up stormwater very well. And of course, they soak up stormwater better than cement, but not nearly as well as other landscaping would. And so we're urging people to think about how they might capture that runoff that comes from their roof and their driveways in the landscaping by adding landscaped beds or just natural beds that may catch that runoff before it leaves the property. And of course, people aren't used to this kind of landscaping, and that includes the landscape workers. And so one of our missions is to try and help the landscape industry figure out how they're going to accommodate that and still make a living. And it is our hope and expectation that that can definitely be done, and that the landscape industry can play a very big positive role in helping our local birds and butterflies.
You know, when we're talking about this, obviously, for the Virginia Turfgrass Journal. So, you know, I think that we've seen habits for a long time for lawns that maybe are just established and haven't really been thought about from the perspective that you're presenting, that you can still have your turfgrass lawn. But also, is that bigger battle with landscape professionals or with homeowners, would you say?
I'd say mostly with the homeowners. And they mostly just haven't thought of this.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you mentioned that maybe people had heard of this by now, I'm always interested to see that in Northern Virginia, where there are 2.4 million people, probably most people have not heard of this.
Right.
I run into people who are very much into environmentalism who haven't heard of this.
Hmm.
So although the movement is growing in a big way and more people are recognizing this and governments are really getting into this because of the reasons I mentioned, we still have a long way to go to reach all the homeowners and other property owners, homeowners associations, even faith communities that have large lawns that where they could use some trees. And so we still have our work to do in that regard. So what I think of when I visit, for instance, a local homeowners association that's a couple miles from here, is that when they did the construction originally of the townhomes and the homes in general, but especially the townhomes because they have these bigger parking areas, they presumably, to flatten the parking lot, they had a whole lot of dirt that they had to move, right? And so they piled it into hills. And then to meet the requirements, the necessary requirements to control erosion and sediment runoff, they scattered grass seeds on those hills. And then they sold the houses, right? And the homeowners came along and they saw these grass-covered hills and they just figured, well, that's normal. But it just like never occurred to them to do anything else about it afterwards. And so from then on, the poor landscape workers have been mowing on these steep hillsides of grass that's not being used at all. Mm. So that doesn't seem very safe to me. But at the very least, it must be difficult.
Sure.
So that's the kind of place that would be just really ideal for potentially reforesting. Sure. Just plant some trees in there. And gradually let the leaves stay there afterwards. And then slowly it'll reforest by itself. You just need to control the invasive plants, which is another subject. And then you won't have to mow that anymore. But you're still going to need to hire your landscape company to take care of that area too. And so we want to help, if we can, anyone who's interested, and figuring out how to make that part of their business model, that they will be maintaining that area so that it looks nice and while controlling the invasive plants. So let me talk about that. We had this initial problem that we cut down the forest and put in a house and turf grass and shrubs and maybe a tree or two and created a sterile environment. So that's a big problem. But an even worse problem is that some of those shrubs and trees and plants actually turned out to be invasive, meaning that because they're no longer in their native environment, they don't have the control mechanisms that the ecosystem normally would provide. And so they escape very frequently because the birds eat their seeds or berries and then carry them elsewhere, including into our few remaining natural areas where they start to grow and grow and grow and displace the native plants that are there. So in Northern Virginia, just as an example, I spent time regularly on wildlife surveys in some natural areas around here. Mm-hmm. And those surveys include documenting all the plants that are in bloom on a given day. And when you look at the data produced, at least a quarter or approximately a quarter of the plant species that we're documenting are not from this continent. Hmm. That, by the way, includes the majority of what we call weeds in our gardens. Okay. Sometimes people think about native plants as being weeds. There's the word weed in the name, such as butterfly weed. Mm. Butterfly weed actually turns out to be one of the best landscaping plants for a formal looking landscape. It's a beautiful orange color. It's very well behaved and stays in a nice small size. And yet it's called butterfly weed. But if you actually look at the weeds themselves, the things that you're pulling out, certainly more than half, and I think probably way more than half of those are non-native. They're coming from Europe and Asia for the most part.
Let me ask how your work aligns with the Virginia Turfgrass Council and the Environmental Institute and how you and Tom have envisioned working together to help each other promote your causes?
Well, so first of all, his audience, we appreciate all the work that they're doing. We know that they have already been doing a lot of work to try and help the environment. Mm-hmm. And they have a way of reaching the very folks that we're trying to reach. So this makes a very good alignment. We met at a Northern Virginia Nursery and Landscaping Association meeting a year or so ago. And when he was introduced, I immediately knew I wanted to go talk to him. And I think he pretty much immediately knew he wanted to talk to me, right? Because we can definitely work together. I don't really actually see any inevitable conflict in our missions here, mm-hmm. which is to make it worth everyone's while to do landscaping in an environmentally friendly way, mm-hmm. and try and make it profitable for people. So, for example, we, Plant Nova Natives, started a regional tree campaign last year. It's called Plant Nova Trees. Mm-hmm. And as we thought about this, our goal being to increase the tree canopy in Northern Virginia, it seemed more and more likely that though planting trees is wonderful, the goal of increasing canopy will never be met if we're cutting them down or losing them for other reasons faster than we're planting them. And there are many reasons why that happens. One reason is certainly statistically the biggest reason, but it is one reason, is that sometimes trees are planted and mulched improperly. And so working with each other to try and help the landscape folks know how to do that properly is a very good thing. And looking around along the roadsides and in our common areas, what we're seeing is that one of the biggest threats to trees is that there are non-native vines like Japanese honeysuckle, for example, that are killing the trees at an enormous rate. Now, we did some extrapolation of data from Tacoma Park, Maryland, that gave us a figure potentially of 3 million trees at risk from invasive vines in Northern Virginia, which is way more than the planting goal of 600,000 little tiny trees. So now that data, that number may or may not turn out to be exactly right, but we know from the work we've done so far in surveying the trees in Northern Virginia that we are talking at the very least hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of trees at risk from invasive vines. And the way you save those trees is to cut the vine at the base of the tree and paint the stump with herbicide. Well, you have to be a certified pesticide applicator to do that if it's not on your own property. Mm-hmm. So this is an enormous opportunity for the landscape industry.
Wow, that's excellent. And sometimes these conversations can be very hard with folks who haven't really sat down to understand what you're talking about. And so I know that in the past, there's been a little tension between the turf grass community and people who are doing what you're doing. And there doesn't have to be that tension. There doesn't have to be conflict if there's some understanding of how you can work together to further both of your goals. So I think that's amazing that you and Tom have connected on that level. And just being able to verbalize, and I think I saw this in an email maybe you sent to Tom, that you know, you don't have to be anti-lawn. You don't have to be anti-turf grass entirely. And we just need to get rid of all lawns altogether. And you know, everybody needs an entirely native and or functional garden as their actual lawn. So it's nice to see where the two can meet and each help advance each other's purpose. I think that's kind of been a missing part for a long time, and it's taking a lot of work to meet in the middle.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll have some misunderstandings along the way and people who are over enthusiastic who haven't thought this through. But hopefully we can be patient with each other and help each other figure these things out. It's going to take a while. And as I said, the landscape industry is critical to this. Without their help, we're not going to get anywhere. Because most, in Northern Virginia anyway, from what I can tell, certainly most of the planting decisions are made by professionals. For the most part, whatever landscaping plants came with a house is what ends up getting sold with a house.
Right.
Because most people don't seem to garden at all. So all those properties out there are still going to need to be taken care of.
Right.
So a little bit of shift in the skill set of the workers could be quite useful. And what we have found is that those companies that provide competent care, maintenance of more landscapes that include native plants, whether they're more naturalized sort of landscapes or formal landscapes that include native plants, they're in huge demand, these companies. There's just not anywhere near enough of them. And so people are always complaining that they can't find anyone to do the work, which basically what we're talking about is figuring out how to properly weed and prune. Because if it's a plant that you're not familiar with, you may not know what the effect is when you take a hedge clipper to it.
Right.
And somebody may be, for instance, putting in annuals every year at their homeowners association entranceway, and then switch it over to perennials, because natives, for the most part, are perennial plants. And you can't then just rip it all out three times a year, spray herbicide to control the weeds and put in new ones. No, you have to actually weed.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You can minimize the weeding by carefully planning which plants you're going to use and how you lay them out. But you're still going to need to be able to distinguish what is, in fact, a weed from the native plant that just hasn't bloomed yet.
Right.
And so maybe take a new skill set, and which is something that companies will have to develop a little bit gradually. But they're still going to be in demand. People still want to pay them.
So
they want to do it themselves.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I being in the green industry publishing area, I read, and it's so funny. I have this conversation all the time, like, oh, well, you must really know how to maintain your lawn. Like, I read more turfgrass research than anybody I know, but yet my lawn is a little disappointing, including in any landscape plants as well. So I know that the homeowners may be less interested or more resistant to taking the time to learn those things. So I love that there's a push to work with landscape professionals. And like you said, with finding enough people to do, I mean, the labor shortage is real. So it's certainly a challenge. But if you can get those who are in the business and working educated and ready to do that type of work, hopefully that's the beginning of the process.
Yes, we can start with small steps. For instance, for homeowners, the small steps we recommend are just adding a few native plants.
Yeah.
Right? That's really easy. And if someone isn't sure how to do this or what would do the most good, what I suggest to people is they take their big empty lawn and plop a tree in the middle of it. Right? Because that tree, when it grows up, is going to provide more value to both the ecosystem and to the temperature of your property and the aesthetics of your property than anything else. But it has to be properly planted and not run over by the lawnmower. So this is a very simple problem, but we hear it all the time that it is the healthiest way of transplanting a tree is to transplant it when it's really young. Mm-hmm. So it may be only 2 feet tall and look like a stick.
Yes.
And so it's easy to nick it with your lawnmower or your string trimmer.
Right.
And so it's just a matter of getting people to really care about not doing that.
Right. What should be so simple. I remember there's my little tree there, the little stick. Maybe don't mow it.
Right. I actually had this experience myself at Herndon Friends Meeting, which is the church I attend. We proudly had a tree planting day last fall and transplanted from my yard, actually, a teeny little oak seedling, white oak, and put it in there and had a little ceremony. And the next spring, it was taken out by the landscape crew.
It can even happen to you. I'm bad.
Right. So this was really entirely my fault and not their fault.
Oh.
Because there are other little tree seedlings that were coming up in the garden beds that definitely didn't belong there and needed to be weeded out. This was just one that we wanted to keep, and I didn't put any kind of marker around it to protect it.
Lessons learned the hard way.
Right.
So list of those in my own.
Definitely not on the landscaping crew at all. But anyway, you see the problem. It's one that we can solve together.
What would be the one major takeaway that you want our readers and or listeners, our turfgrass managers in Virginia, what would you want them to take away from your mission and your cause and our conversation here the most?
We all appreciate the birds and value the wildlife that's around us. We all want to help it, but most of us don't know how. That includes everybody, not just the turfgrass industry. And so let's work together and make it happen.
Fantastic. Don't miss an episode of Virginia Turfgrass. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit us at theturfzone.com.
You've been listening to The Turf Zone. Thank you to our sponsors, including Buy Sod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. For more episodes of The Turf Zone, visit theturfzone.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.